Welcome to the infamous podcast, Bitch, I'm Not Well. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Brandy.
And we're invested on taking you down to Crazy Town, where we talk about crazy bitches who are truly unwell. Today, we're going to talk about the eunuch maker.
This sounds interesting.
It is very interesting.
You got me at eunuch.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Marius Gustavsson.
Oh, Italian?
He is the eunuch maker. Nope, Norwegian.
Oh.
So a little bit of warning. This podcast entails graphic details of extreme body modification. So have you ever heard of a eunuch?
Yeah, they used to work for the Chinese emperors in their harem. Yeah.
Yeah. Correct.
That's okay. They couldn't work there if they were not a eunuch.
Brandy gets the prize.
Yay! What is it?
Applause.
Makes me feel nice. Okay. Makes me feel all warm and tingling inside.
I had never heard of it. The only time I've ever heard of it was on the Game of Thrones.
I still haven't watched that.
Yeah. The characters Varys, Grey Worm, and the Unsullied, which was an army, were referred to as eunuchs, having no testicles or penises.
How do they pee?
They leave enough of the urethra tube so that they can pee.
Oh, God. But
maybe they pee sitting down. We don't know.
I don't even have a penis, and that makes me hurt.
Mm-hmm. All right, so before we dive into the story of Marius Gustavsson, the star of this podcast...
Ooh.
We're going to go as far back as 1122 BC, that is before Christ.
Damn!
Yes.
That's far.
Castrations were performed prior to puberty to prevent the development and growth of functioning adult sex organs, or after puberty to remove any desire for sexual behavior in sperm formation and cause impotency.
Oh.
Yeah, oh. Oh, that.
That's what happens.
Yes. In China, eunuchs were held in high regard, like you just said. They were serving as political advisors to the emperors as early as the Zhou period from 1122 to 221 BC.
Cool.
And continued as such under the Han, Tang, Ming, and Sung dynasties, persisting almost until the end of the imperial regime in 1912.
Dang.
Crazy, right?
That's a long time. They still had eunuchs?
Yep. At times, palace eunuchs became more powerful than the emperor and effectively ruled China.
How did you become lucky enough to become a eunuch?
Lucky? I don't know.
Put my name in that hat.
Oh, no. Most underwent castration. Oh, here we know. Most underwent castration as a condition of their employment, and others were castrated as punishment or after they had been sold by poverty-stricken parents.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
They were also employed as court advisors and officials in Persia, Achaemenid, from 559 to 330 BC, and were also employed as advisors to Roman emperors, Claudius, ooh, Nero, Vitellius, and Titus, as well as most of the subsequent emperors of the Byzantine Empire.
I'll bet they loved working for Nero.
I bet. Ooh. Political eunuchs also flourished in the centers of Muslim power after 750 AD. And as a class, eunuch advisors only disappeared with the end of the Ottoman Empire in the early 20th century. That'd be the 1900s, folks.
Oh my gosh. So like 100 years ago.
Yes.
Mm-mm.
Those who
there
were...
There could have been eunuchs on the Titanic.
Oh my gosh. There may have been. That's crazy to think about it that way, but yeah. Those who were to serve as guards or servants in harems or other women's quarters were castrated for obvious reasons. And those who served as chamberlains to kings were castrated, I suppose, to avoid any like conflict or pissing contests, you know, like take away that testosterone.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were entrusted with great matters, both private and financial, and were very important influencers over their royal masters. All throughout Christian periods, some were emasculated voluntarily. That's the penis and the nutsack removed. Voluntarily for the avoidance of sexual sin or temptation or with a belief that they were thereby serving God.
That would suck if you're like, yeah, I want to be a political advisor, and you're a moron, and you become a eunuch, and it's like, just because you're a eunuch,
you will not do.
It does not make you smart. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it doesn't increase your intelligence. It just...
Oh, it could be like that Seinfeld episode. Whenever they don't have sex for a while, they get smarter.
What? I had not watched that.
Yeah, Chris and I have been watching them on Netflix before we go to bed at night. They're just so funny, and that was one of the episodes we just watched. Like, George, Jerry, Kramer, and Elaine all did like a bet that they, who could hold out the longest.
Oh, okay.
And George got like smarter from not having sex.
That figures. That checks.
Yeah. I was like, what? I asked Chris, I wonder if that really works. Oh my
God. No, because I'd be highly intelligent.
I'd be dumb as pretty.
Oh, go, Brandy, go.
We're going to take that part out.
I'm dumb as dirt. I'll be getting bedded every night. The most disturbing yet interesting fact that I found on eunuchs was the Italian practice of castrating boys in order to train them as adult soprano singers. So let's talk about this for a hot minute.
Okay.
Beginning in the 16th century, castrati were used by choirs as a substitution for women. Was there a shortage of women in Italy? No. This was not due to a shortage of women, but as a result of women being banned in the Vatican choir.
Oh.
Right.
So they caused this problem themselves. The men did.
Yes. So you're not going to allow a woman in there, but we're going to chop off the nuts of young boys.
Come so here, that they little can child.
retain their young voice for the rest of their lives and have a beautiful choir.
Huh. I would have never thought that having testicles or not having them would affect the tone of your voice.
Well, it does. Apparently.
I wonder how they found that out.
Well, so you know how, okay, so young boys, whenever they hit puberty, their testicles usually drop, and so does their voice. Like, it's just an all-in-one. Like, they wake up one day, their voice is gravelly, it's squeaky, they're, you know, it's changing.
Oh, yeah.
And they're, that's puberty. So.
It really does happen.
I guess
happen.
They figured out if they were castrated or maybe from the eunuchs or whatever, having the higher voices or.
Yeah, it really does happen overnight, because some of Drew's friends came over this summer and they still had their like little high-pitched voices.
Yeah.
And then they came over a few weeks ago and they started talking. And I was like, oh my God, y'all aren't babies anymore.
Yes,
I don't like this.
It's crazy.
I don't like
it. It's crazy. But I don't really know all the medical science behind it, because again, I got my medical degree from the Dollar General.
Mm.
So we do not ever rely on what I say.
I got mine from Google MD.
Well, that's much better than the Dollar General.
You have cancer and you're going to die. I'm sorry.
Oops. Well, there we go.
I stubbed my toe. Nope.
All right. It's a sure thing because Google said it.
Yep.
So the initiation of this procedure was approved by the Vatican in 1589 when Pope Sixtus V decreed that the castrati should replace boys in falsetto in the St. Peter's Choir.
So they had young boys in there at one time, and they decided we don't want boys anymore. We want men who just don't have balls.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have just had boys in the choir, right?
Yeah.
And then once you're a certain age.
Like, sorry, you're going to have to go do another job.
Yeah.
That blows my mind. Like, who thought of this? Who thought it would be a good idea?
I don't know. Like, I think body mutilation back then wasn't a huge disturbance. So the parents making this decision for their young boys aspired for their sons to have a singing career with the revered male singers, the castrati, who maintained their high-pitched tone into adulthood. By the 1600s, over 4,000 Italian boys being castrated per year.
What? They had that many choirs?
No.
Oh.
Although the Vatican approved this practice.
practice?
It was illegal. So the young boys were taken to backstreet barbers or surgeons to have the procedure done. They were subjected to this painful experience without anesthesia.
Oh.
And it was unlikely that the operations were sanitary. An estimated 20% died as a result. And their families would make up stories about how their sons had fallen off horses or been attacked by wild boars to avoid criminal punishment because it was illegal.
How can you justify doing that to your son?
I don't know. I mean, the ones who gained fame also earned great fortune, traveling across the continent, receiving huge fees for their operatic appearances. One of the most famous castrato, Farinelli, was even recruited to sing for the Spanish king for 10 years. His voice allegedly helped to alleviate the king's depression. But many more of the castrati suffered through poverty and obscurity, not to mention the side effects of their castration. Like, what if your parents choose this for you and you're 5 years old and you can't carry a tune in a bucket when you're six?
Yeah.
Like, you just grow old and fat with a Minnie Mouse voice? How does that?
Yeah. And like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. That's like, you don't even know if they're good at this yet, yeah. But you're going to do it anyway. And you may or may not die. It's fine.
It's fine. Everything will be fine. Only 20% die.
I wonder how many had
two out of 10
complications after, like, they healed and everything, but like.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Yeah.
Oh, you have that on?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So some of the health conditions were growing unusually tall due to the lack of hormones and not being able to close their growth plates.
Wow.
And then they had added stress on their organs, osteoporosis later in life. As they grew older, they frequently experienced larger than normal chests, jaws, and noses. They had wider hips, chubby arms, chubby throats, and suffered severe depression, headaches, and other mental issues. Welcome to womanhood.
I was just about to say.
Right? Welcome to womanhood. Well,
mm-hmm. Hope you enjoy it.
Except
you don't get any of the
You didn't
benefits.
Have to have a monthly cycle, and you didn't have to squirt a 22-pound baby out your twat. Okay. You don't have to deal with the cramping and the. Anyway, the castrati started to dwindle down in the late 1700s due to women being allowed back on the stage.
Woohoo! Oh, I bet they were excited.
Yeah.
The women and the young boys.
Uh-huh. Jean-Jacques Rousseau wrote in 1779 that parents who sent their sons to be castrated were inhuman fathers who give up their children for the amusement of voluptuous and cruel persons.
Hmm.
Like singing for the kings and the emperors and the, you know, that is, it's one thing if you choose to do it, but when you choose for your kid, like to alter their physical being, that's wrong.
And back then they had no pain medicine. They didn't have like ibuprofen.
Yeah.
They had nothing.
Yeah. So the castrati started to become an embarrassment in Italy.
Oh, okay.
And Pope Pius X forbid their use in the Sistine Chapel in 1903. The last of the Sistine Chapel castrati singers, Alessandro Moreschi, didn't fully retire until 1913. Known as the Angel of Rome, Moreschi died in 1921. This is a recording of Alessandro and the choir in 1904. Now, so we're about to hear the castrati sing. Like,
oh, okay.
Okay.
Was he good? Well, don't tell me.
I'm going to leave that up to you. Okay.
Okay. I'm excited. All right.
Be patient. It's coming. What a treat.
Can't wait.
I could sit in the church and listen to that. And also, at this time that he recorded this, he was older, like much older. So I'm sure his voice was a little smoother, you know, as he was young, a young boy or whatever. But that's basically like what you got. Bunch of boys castrated singing like Minnie Mouse, like to me.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm sure it was a beautiful experience in the chapel. And
I wonder how old he was in that picture.
In that picture, oh, and we're looking on YouTube. So I don't know, probably in his 30s or 40s.
He looks really young.
Yeah. But he does have the, you know, the big expanded chest, which actually benefited them because their lungs were bigger.
Hmm.
And so by exercising it with singing and all that, so they had an excellent lung capacity. But anyway, so now that you know more than you ever knew you didn't want to know about male castrations, let's jump into our story.
Damn, I forgot there's a story with
there's
this.
There's a story.
I was like, man, this is great. Some history.
I know. Jeremy was like, damn, you ought to do it just on the Italian singers. Yeah. You know? But we did touch on that. If you want to know more about it, just look up the Italian castrati. Okay. So Marius Gustavsson grew up in Drammen, Norway. Drammen is a rural area on the outskirts of Oslo, Norway.
Have you been there?
Never. Never been to Norway.
Hmm. I really thought you had
gone. That's shocking.
That is shocking.
There's a lot of places I've never been to.
I feel like you've been everywhere.
But I will be there one day. I will. Yes. Yes. You too.
Probably.
You will. We're throwing it in the universe. So the school that Marius attended was a very small school with maybe 100 students or so. In Marius's class, there were 16 children, 10 boys and 6 girls. Half of the kids came from farms that were very isolated. In the fifth grade, one of Marius's teachers was adopting a girl from Korea, and Marius was very nice to her and was described as a tender-hearted, sweet kid by his classmates. He was not an athlete, so often he was chosen, like, last on the soccer team, you know, like when they pick for kickball or whatever. I want you.
Yeah.
I want you. I want you. Well, he was always the last because, you know, he was not very athletic. And he was not academically strong. He lacked social skills and didn't really know how to interact with the other kids. He was known as a bit of a misfit, and that just his classmates always remember that he was picked on a lot.
Poor baby.
I know, it's sad. So Marius was an only child and lived with his parents, aunt and uncle, cousins, and grandparents in one house.
Cool.
None of his classmates could remember him ever having a friend.
Aww.
And just remembered that he kept to himself. They say looking back, it was obvious that he was gay, but in the small community and at the time they were all growing up, they didn't really have a concept of what that meant. In high school, Marius became the president of the DUS, which is a month-long graduation celebration. He was president, being president of the board, he was organizing the parades and events and working with the other presidents in the area. This was a shock to many since he was known as an outsider and now he held this position of authority because it was really on as, this person had great responsibility and stuff. And it was usually a position that prime ministers or prominent politicians would have on their resumes. So everybody was like, damn, Marius.
I was wondering if this was like an elected position or if it was a like if they had to vote.
It was not a student body election. It was probably like a teacher election or, you know, I don't really know. So I don't want to misspeak.
Yeah.
Over the next few years, Gustavsson became a notable figure in the local counterculture and then went on to become the leader of LH, which was the Lesbians and Gays Organization for Freedom. Through this organization, he was able to get homosexual education into schools, pushing for an inclusive sexual education for people going through puberty. He liked helping young people, coaching them when they were coming out, and serving as a counselor type person, giving them something he needed but never had. Gustavsson was not thought to do these things for publicity, but recognition. Didn't want to be out there in the public eye, but he did like the recognition or the acceptance of people, I guess, is really what he was trying to do. Like, good job, you know, because all his life he had been beaten down pretty much, sounds like.
Yeah, he was never the first choice. He was never high five.
And here he was, like, being held up, like, yes, thank you, you know. He moved to Tonum and was leader of a housing association.
Okay.
And he was in the process of redoing a home for himself.
Okay.
So he got a can of paint.
And like charged it to the housing?
Charged it to the housing authority.
Okay.
And he didn't get caught for that. So he went back and bought more supplies to redo his home. Then he began submitting fake invoices to the tune of £5,000 in the court documents. Gustafsson agreed to accept what he did, but he did not agree with the level of severity that the court placed on it and said that what he did wasn't that bad. So he blamed the housing authority for not having better controls in place.
Mm-hmm. It's your fault I stole from you.
Then he had the balls at that time to say that they should have known something because some of the bills he sent were quite large.
Like, oh my God.
How stupid are you? It's really your fault.
I was doing this to check your system and your system failed. So
you failed the test.
I mean, technically you should be put on probation, not me.
A few years later, he did this again on a larger scale. And got away with taking merchandise worth over £30,000.
Cool.
He served 8 months in prison. Clearly, he's a person who doesn't see things in a normal way.
He obviously doesn't learn from his mistakes.
He didn't think that he did anything wrong. You know, he saw it as, it's on them. I kind of feel like most criminals do. Like, hey, that's on you. You leave your door open. I'm coming in. I'm going to murder you. That's on you.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have left your door open. You were asking for it.
And I mean, he learned from his past mistakes of what not to do so he does not get caught.
Well, he got caught.
Yeah. So he didn't, again, he doesn't learn from his mistakes.
He doesn't. He doesn't think he has mistakes. Okay. So after divorcing his husband, he moved to Finsbury Park in North London, where he found common ground with others looking for extreme body modifications. There are some that believe Gustafsson was helping people who suffered from body dysmorphia and looked at him as a hero. And I have to strongly disagree. I think this was a man who not only prospered financially on the insecurities, financial distress, and inner shame of other human beings, but felt like a god, having so much power to be able to convince someone to willingly go through such a violent act of self-harm. Gustafsson recruited like-minded individuals to assist him, 9 of them, to be precise.
Damn.
And was more than able to obtain willing participants to undergo these horrific procedures through his website. He preyed on the weak and insecure, those who were sexually abused as children, still feeling shamed for what had happened to them, those who felt like certain body parts didn't belong on them, those who were ashamed by sexual pleasure, those who were financially burdened, or those who suffered other psychological issues. Gustafsson offered a fix for their problems that were unacceptable to society or that they couldn't relay to those who couldn't understand. So I watched the documentary on Crime and Investigation with Marcel Thoreau, where I gained some of this information for the podcast. Thoreau interviewed Gustafsson in prison.
Mm-hmm. When did all this happen? Like what? Year or years.
2014, I think.
Oh, wow. So like recent.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I was wondering whenever you said internet, I'm like, wait, I thought it was like the 80s.
No. This is in the 2000s. So he actually went to prison and interviewed this guy. And Gustafsson told Thoreau, you get status on the website from going through the procedure. You don't hear anyone saying, oh, wait a second, is this a good idea? It's the danger of ending up in this sort of self-reinforcing silo where people's extreme belief kind of hardens and doesn't get challenged. Then outside that, it's just the stupid normies who don't understand how cool this is. That's what Gustafsson had to say about it.
I guess I'm a normie.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Let's think about this. But actually, there was a guy that did... there's several that wanted to stop. And he was like, oh, no. We're going through with it. We're here. We're done. Yeah. So Thoreau felt as though Gustafsson really had no remorse or regret about butchering so many vulnerable men. It seemed to me that he genuinely thought he was doing a great service and giving a sense of satisfaction that they wouldn't or couldn't get elsewhere.
He wasn't a doctor, right?
No. No medical experience whatsoever.
I mean, this is 2014. You can probably go to the hospital and get this done. I mean, not exactly this, but...
Well, yeah.
A lot less painful way.
Yes. And this is over in Europe. So it was not, you couldn't get those alterations.
Oh.
That, is it an alteration? Yeah, pretty much. Can I get a hymn in this?
Trying to think. I'm like, I don't know.
Modifications.
Yeah. Body modifications.
Yeah, okay.
I guess it would be like chosen body.
Can you heal up this ball sack? It's hanging a little too low.
A little too low. I wonder if you can do that. Put some Botox in there.
Oh my God. Tighten that shit up. It's too wrinkly.
Can you imagine? Go into the doctor. Yeah, I'd like some Botox right here. And maybe a lift.
I'd like the ball lift, please. The ball.
Do you think that exists?
No. I don't think it exists. Oh, maybe God. After today it will.
It might. I'm patenting this idea.
Patenting it. We said it first.
I don't know what it would get you for doing this, but in case it becomes hip, we were the first ones to say it.
And it is all inclusive, even lift, testicular lifts, testicular elevation. It doesn't matter what you call it. If it's a ball lift, it's ours.
It's ours.
We know that's just the guy that can give it to you.
Okay. He'll do it at a discount.
Yes.
All he needs is some chocolate cookies and cigarettes.
Yes, a conjugal visit will get you in and out.
He don't like us, so you're going to have to do it.
Okay. So Gustafsson had a magical way of making people feel like removing their penis and testicles was completely normal.
You just said magical and removing penis and testicle in the same sentence.
I did. It's crazy, isn't it?
It was magical.
But continue. He did. It was just so matter of fact and like, it's normal. Like, let's just do it. But he was just like, okay, we're going to do this. We can do it on a Tuesday. I'll book the Airbnb. I know a guy. You'll feel much better. Yes. He used Airbnbs.
Oh, you're serious. I thought you were being a smartass.
Hotels and Airbnbs. And think about that in your next rental. I wonder somebody's ball sack might be laying on your pillow.
I wonder who was castrated in this bed before I slept in it. I hope they changed the sheets.
That's just wrong.
Yeah. And it's
there's probably a lot of stuff that happens in Airbnbs.
Unsanitary.
It was, yes. So, besides making something horrific seem so nonchalant, he did offer a great severance package.
Oh, really?
Okay. You don't get it?
No. Say, oh, shit. Wait. Shit.
Okay.
Good severance package.
All right, that was a little out of line.
I'm not at the top of my sarcasm game today.
But he did offer them money in exchange to be live streamed on his website, which really appealed to the ones who were in financial distress. No, because it was a good deal, like
£10,000
or so.
Oh my God! How did he get all this money?
Through his website.
So did he charge people for this procedure?
No.
Oh.
No.
So people free. Just donated to his website to watch.
It was like
people...
a pay-per-view.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Ouch. So Thoreau was able to interview some of the voluntary eunuchs. Some stated that they went through horrific procedures in unsanitary conditions and were never even paid by Gustafsson regret and suffer the physical and mental consequences. Others are pleased that they were able to get the relief they needed. One of these persons is Edward. So Edward is non-binary. So he refers to himself as they, them, we.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Edward said Gustafsson was oddly forthcoming and that they had tried to back out at one point. And Gustafsson said, no, I've come all this way. You're going to meet me. And so they met. Edward described him as very friendly, charming, and nice. It was a big jolly bear. With a huge bag full of things.
A huge bag full of dicks and balls.
Dicks and balls. He wanted to use a device designed for animals that clamp the testicular cords. And he was quite keen to do it then and there. But Ed said, no, it's nice to meet you, but I don't think so. And that was that.
Oh, thank God.
But it wasn't long before Gustafsson created a pay-per-view website of his own called theeunuchmaker.com.
I really thought he was going to like drug Ed and do it anyway.
Oh, no. Oh, these were all free, willing
And whenever you said that he used a thing designed for animals, like people taking their animals to the vet probably have more sanitary conditions and more
medication. Yes, and I'm so glad that I never saw any clamps or anything like that. Yeah. I'd probably pass out.
But like at least they were like your animals are put to
sleep, Tucker.
And then they wake up and they're given pain medicine and making sure that they're clean and not going to die of a stupid infection or something.
Right. Yep, yep. So he created the pay-per-view website called The Eunuch Maker. And it was on this website that one could volunteer to have parts of their body removed in exchange for money. And others could pay an annual VIP fee of £100 to live stream the procedures. Wow. From 2016 to 2022, the website earned over £300,000
cool.
and had over 22,000 subscribers.
That many people want to watch other people get chopped up?
Y'all some sick bitches. Oh, y'all sick. Y'all just sick.
I wonder if they're the ones that watch foot porn on
Probably. Edward said it was a sense of relief meeting Gustafsson because they were talking to someone face-to-face who didn't think they were mad or a deviant. Edward went to visit him a number of times, and one of those times it was decided that it would be done. So even though he was like, no, we're not ready to do this now, they still maintained a friendship because they were like-minded, you know, I guess.
Yeah, like he could relate.
Yeah, they could relate to each other. So Edward said that although it wasn't done against his will, Gustafsson did put pressure saying, if we don't do this, you're really going to be disappointed. You need to do this. Edward held his testicles and Gustafsson clamped down on one of them while being filmed and live streamed. The blood supply stopped and started to swell up and Edward had to go to the A&E, which is the emergency room
London,
where he had to get it surgically removed. Now, what do you tell them at the emergency room? Like, yeah. I shut my nutsack in a door? Like, what?
Yeah, did Gustafsson go with him to the ER? Like, hey.
No. This was, no. He went later and had it removed.
I'm not a doctor, but I attempted to do this.
I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah, I woke up like this.
I just lost blood supply.
Oh, man.
I was trying to clip some pubes, and I accidentally cut my little testicle.
It hurts so bad.
It hurts. Take it off. Oh, Edward states that he was really pleased and kind of needed to get the second half done.
Please tell me he had the hospital do the second half.
No.
Oh, gosh.
No. Gustafsson told him, hey, I can help you remove the other half. So one of his...
cronies?
Yeah, one of his crime buddies, a retired chemist named Peter Waits and Gustafsson met Edward at a hotel to perform the procedure on the second testicle.
Oh, God.
Gustafsson was videoing and Waits performed the procedure. Edward was numbed.
Oh, at least
the side numbed. Of his scrotum was cut open and Waits cut off the remaining testicle. Edward was grateful to Gustafsson for helping him do what he could not medically get done. So you can't just go over there and have...
Okay, I thought you could.
Mm-mm. I mean, who's going to cut off a healthy testicle? Nobody.
Yeah.
So... In 2019, Gustafsson opted to have his boyfriend cut off one of his legs.
Wait, Gustafsson's legs?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Did he put it back on?
So, no.
Oh.
So he froze it, like with dry ice, and they just cut it off.
Oh, my God.
And I don't know if they burned it or healed it. You know, I don't know how they stopped all the blood, but just chopped it right off. Then later that year, one of his nipples... he had cut off.
What?
And he posted all of this on his website. And then his business started booming.
Oh, gosh.
Yep.
I mean, if he's willing to do this to himself, what else will he do?
Oh, he's like a hero. Speaking to Daniel, another client of Gustafsson who asked him for a penectomy, which is the surgical removal of a penis. I think that's...
Is that really what it's called?
Yes.
Okay.
It is a penectomy.
I didn't know if you just made this up.
No. I didn't make it up. Mm. The surgical part is what I take issue with because there's nothing surgical about this. Like,
yeah, I feel like there's no like scrubbing and coming in sanitized. And
so we're going to say, well, a penectomy is the surgical removal. But, and he may have asked for that.
Yeah, but
he got a hatchet removal.
Gustavson was not doing a surgical.
He got a kitchen knife removal.
Oh, God.
Okay, so.
Go get your tweezers.
Daniel, now this is sad, was battered as a kid and rented out to different men by his mother.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I know. He stated that he was very vulnerable and thought about being rid of his penis at a young age. Like, this is what gets me in trouble. You know, I just want it off.
Yeah.
So he ended up on the street, nowhere to go. He met a man who got his kicks out of putting people in pain. Having nowhere to go, like I said, he moved in with this man and quickly discovered that there was no way he was leaving.
Like
this is not Gustavson. This is just somebody that he met.
Okay.
On the street, I guess. So Daniel said the man's favorite thing was cock torture.
What?
And that he would take photos and sell them. And that there was one photo that he took that Daniel was really recognizable in with his cock and balls, right?
Oh, gosh.
That photo went viral. And sadly, Daniel was trapped where he was by shame and the thought of something worse happening to him. Because this man would always threaten him with cutting off his privates completely if he didn't behave. So Daniel claimed that he was locked in a relationship with a sadist and he began to hate himself. He said every time he went to the toilet to pee, he would look at it and think, if that wasn't there, that would be the end of it. Because there'd be no more torture. There'd be nothing left for him to torture. Daniel revealed that he was chatting to someone online who told him that Gustavson could set up a penectomy if he wanted it. He explained, I met him at a supermarket outside of London. They sat in the car for about 2 hours chatting. And he said he was a proper gent. I liked him. He was open and honest. It was a good conversation. He trusted me. I trusted him. He told me that he does the balls first, then the penis. And then he asked me about the photo. He said he noticed it was me, and it was worth quite a lot of money. Quite famous.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
So he's talking about the picture or his cock and balls?
His cock and balls.
Oh.
And he said, you can get quite a lot of money for it. And Daniel was like, really? How much? He said, 20,000 pounds.
Cool.
And he said, I thought he would want money off me to do it. But he said, no. I said, well, who would buy that? He said, I already have a buyer.
What?
Yeah. So he was planning to cut his cock and balls off and sell them to someone who wanted to purchase removed penis and testicles.
Were they going to like taxidermy it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they were going to eat it. Maybe they were going to look at it, pet it, caress it, hang it from the rearview mirror.
And
I don't know.
Stroke it and love it.
Why are you shrinking?
You look so old and shriveled now. God. Oh, gross.
Well, okay.
Oh man. All right. I feel like no.
No.
He's taking advantage of people.
Huh?
Gustavson is taking advantage of people. I wonder how much money he got out of this.
Oh, a lot.
Oh, yeah. You're going to get 20,000 of the 120,000 I'm getting for this.
Oh, yeah. Gustavson is the evil behind it all. Mm. Like, he's the master manipulator. So, anyway, Daniel said he was tempted by the money and even met up with Gustavson at his home to see where the procedure would be done. He said he showed me his tools. Not his tool.
And he opened his toolbox and it's like, here's my wrench. I just used it on my radiator.
Oh my God. Don't worry. We'll brush it off. I didn't have a clue what it was. He showed me how he would do it with the two bands. He asked me if I wanted to try the bands on. An alarm bell started ringing when he came up with that. And I left shortly after. Like,
you want to give him a try?
You want to practice? You want to? Can we video the practice? So after giving it some thought, he decided against having his penis removed, but he continued his friendship with Gustavson. So apparently this guy was really, you know, had a magical way.
Really personable.
Yeah.
He was magical.
Yeah, it was very easy to talk to.
Like Dumbledore. Just kidding, Dumbledore. You're nothing like him.
You shall not pass as a man. Another man who remained anonymous, we'll call him Bob.
Ah, Bob's a good name.
Bob said he met Gustafsson online to discuss sadomasochism, also known as S&M.
What is that?
A term that describes the act of deriving pleasure from inflicting or receiving pain or humiliation.
Oh.
Bob said Gustafsson was into a bit of everything. CBT stuff, that'd be cock ball torture.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Torture stuff, bondage. Bob revealed that he met up with Gustafsson to play, quote unquote, but he set a limit, quote unquote, of no permanent damage and that he was very trusting. Bob took some drugs, laid down, and got tortured just because.
Sounds like a great Saturday afternoon.
He was enjoying himself. Yeah.
Oh, Bob.
I guess it's kind of like a massage for you and I. Bob claimed that Gustafsson later to convince him of the benefits of castration, including being able to control his sex drive. So a few days later, he removed the no permanent damage from the limits. And Gustafsson said, well, we should castrate you then. And they started planning.
What?
Like a picnic. Bob got the drugs, went up to Gustafsson's apartment in London, where Gustafsson went to his wardrobe and pulled out the clamps. Bob never in his wildest dreams thought about the clamps. And this was the moment that he knew, I screwed up.
Yep.
Although the pain was excruciating, instead of calling a stop to it, Bob just called for more drugs. By the time Bob got home, his testicles were purple and the size of a melon.
Oh my gosh.
The pain got more and more extreme. Bob said, I remember lying in bed in agony as the video was posted online. Bob revealed that he later agreed to have everything cut off, including his now dead testicles.
Oh. Like.
He rented an Airbnb to do the procedure and he started to think he might actually die. He said, at that point, I realized how much damage Gustafsson had done to me. I realized he had been talking bullshit. I started to see that he was just a butcher. I was lying there, scrotum cut open, and I remember thinking, I don't care if I live or die. I just want to hurt him.
Oh, my gosh.
Despite going through with the procedure, the man claimed he didn't see any of the compensation from the video revenue, which Gustafsson had promised.
Oh.
Yet another unpaid victim.
Like, if he liked torture and had it removed, then he can't do what he likes to do anymore.
I know. How are you
like
going
to... Bob, like, how are you
Supposedly, I mean, once you remove the testicles, there is no more sexual desire. So,
oh,
yeah. Hmm. Gustafsson was involved in at least 30 procedures on 13 victims between 2017 and 2021 and recruited others to help him carry out more operations.
Oh, gosh.
He was able to fall under the radar so long due to the forums and chat groups being protected by encrypted platforms and being hidden like on the dark web.
Okay.
So it's not like the people looking for these platforms were going to discuss any of this openly, much less contact the police. Yeah. Nobody's turning them in.
Mm-mm.
In 2021, Gustafsson's operation finally came crashing down. Authorities in the UK, working alongside with international partners, arrested him and several associates after an investigation uncovered the scope of his activities. His makeshift clinic was raided, revealing unsanitary surgical tools, records of past clients, and evidence of the live streaming operation. For the victims, the consequences of Gustafsson's actions were devastating. Many were left with permanent physical damage and psychological scars. Among Gustafsson's gruesome actions were cooking human testicles, which he plated up to be eaten.
Oh, God.
And keeping body parts in a freezer and Tupperware. On one occasion, Gustafsson cooked a pair of severed testicles and ate them for lunch in an artfully arranged salad platter, while in another video, he was seen tasting a severed penis.
Oh, my God.
Police found more testicles and other body parts in a chest freezer in his house, stored in plastic bags and takeaway containers. They also found the 46-year-old's penis in a drawer 4 years after it had been amputated, while two of his testicles were hanging in a picture frame above his bed.
Huh. How did those age?
I don't know, but I wonder if they let him take that to jail with him.
I wonder how his house smelled.
Like mushrooms.
Like rotting meat.
During the trial, the court heard hearings of 999 calls. That would be 911 here in the States. in which Gustafsson lied to the operators about how his victims injured themselves. There were many calls to 911, and each time it was an accident to the groin area where an ambulance had to be called out. Suspish.
I mean, how many accidents to the groin can one person have at their home?
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe they weren't all from his home, you know, maybe it was Airbnbs, but they're like, you know.
I mean, the same paramedics had to be sent out a couple of times, like, huh.
Maybe we need to have the knife companies put a warning on their knives for groin accidents. This is crazy.
This is crazy. It all happens around this guy. Yeah. He must be really unlucky.
What is happening? I don't like it.
I don't like this.
The court also heard from an anonymous victim during the trial that he went to police after feeling like he was tricked into a procedure while under the influence of drugs. Mm-hmm. In his victim impact statement, he said Gustafsson created a cult-like atmosphere. Cult-like atmosphere around him, which was captivating and mesmerizing. And his veneer of respectability was a masterstroke. Mm-hmm. Masterstroke? Okay. Another victim was branded with EM for eunuch maker, while a dice game was being played to decide what body parts would be removed from another.
What?
Yeah, like this dude was laying there and being branded after he had been severed, while all his, you know, his accomplices were in the background just playing dice. Like, well, let's see what... Let's see what's going to be removed from the next guy. Is it going to be a finger, a toe?
I got a 7. That means the kneecap.
The kneecap. Oh, that's going to be rough. Oh,
I can do this.
I can do it.
I've watched YouTube videos.
Another of his victims was only 16 years old.
Dang.
That's not. Judge Mark Lucraft Casey claimed his motivation was a mix of sexual gratification as well as a financial reward, and that the procedures were grave and life-threatening matters with permanent and irreversible results. He also stated that many of the victims may require extensive medical and other assistance for the rest of their lives. As for the body parts being kept in Tupperware in his freezer, the judge stated that there's no doubt Gustafsson would regard them as trophies of his actions of carrying out extreme body modifications.
I think what really gets me about this is he, like, preyed on vulnerable people.
Yes.
And acted like he was their savior and he was going to help them. And in the end, he tortured them and just made it worse mentally.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're just trying to help somebody because, you know, they really need to be rid of this and they feel it in their heads and their minds and they're not well, first of all, go become a doctor. And fight for those rights to, you know, be able to help people in that way.
Yes. And I mean, a lot of these guys had bad backstories. Like, they need a therapist to talk to.
Yeah, that's and what I was going
to
say.
Even if they decide to do this voluntarily after
that, sessions.
Yeah, many you need sessions. To still go and get everything straightened. Like,
that's right. Because that's not a fix.
No, like, that's a big change to just like, oh, okay, bye. Like, even if you know you want to do it, you still need to talk to somebody afterwards. Even if it's just to tell them that you liked it.
You need to talk to somebody before and...
Yeah, before and after. Like, it needs to be a continuous thing.
Yeah, because it's not like your mental thoughts go away.
Yeah.
You still have to sit with those. So, I don't know.
Yeah, like, even people that get mastectomies, I know a lot of them have to talk to... People before and after, just to make sure they're handling it okay.
Yeah. Any change to the body's huge. I mean, if you hear Megan talk, she still misses the tip of her finger. Like,
God, Megan. I love her. She's great.
Tip of her finger's gone. And it's traumatic to her.
She misses it every day of her life.
Yeah. He conducted the business alongside 6 accomplices who were also sentenced between 4.5 years and 12 years for their part in the plot. His accomplices include his right-hand man, Peter Waits. Waits pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit GBH.
What's that?
That's great bodily harm.
Oh, okay.
Between 2016 and 2022 and received a 12-year sentence.
Do you think Gustafsson picked Peter as his right-hand man?
Peter Waits!
Peter! Well, I see what you did there.
Wait, the next one is Dick.
Shut up. Are you serious?
No.
Oh, damn.
But it is Janus. Does that help?
Vaginas.
Not Vaginas.
Oh, Janus. Janus. Yeah, that's a cool name.
Janus Atkin, a 38-year-old trainee vet from Newport, pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit GBH between 2016 and 2022 and received a 12-year sentence. David Carruthers, a 61-year-old retired hospital porter, was involved in 6 procedures, including 4 testicle removers. Although he was retired as a hospital porter, he had no medical qualifications whatsoever. Carruthers pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit GBH between 2016 and 2022 and received an 11-year sentence.
I wonder why he got one less year.
I don't know. Eon Secor, I think I said that right.
We're sorry.
A 30-year-old Romanian pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit GBH between 2016 and 2022, received a 5-year and 8-month sentence. David Carruthers' partner, 32-year-old Ashley Williams, now this is a guy, it's not a girl.
Oh, okay.
Pleaded guilty to causing GBH with intent, received a 4.5-year sentence. 61-year-old German Stefan Scharf pleaded guilty to causing GBH with intent and received a sentence of 4.5 years. Jacob Krimi Appleby, a 23-year-old Appleby.
Is he from Appleby. The Appleby? Appleby? Yeah, Appleby. I don't know. I like Applebee's better.
Gustafsson's boyfriend, Jacob Krimi Appleby.
How old was Gustafsson at this time? Because his boyfriend, you say, is 23.
Well, yeah.
Was Gustafsson a cougar?
Whoa.
La cougar?
La cougarille. I don't know. We'll look in a second.
I'm going to need you to pull up a picture of Gustafsson because I keep thinking that this is him.
I know.
And I'm like, he looks so sweet and innocent. Because that's not him, Brandy.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah, see, he doesn't look like the type of person that would give me confidence in him chopping off my balls.
Nope.
If I had any. I do not have any, though.
Let's be clear.
Oh, my God. I think I have this knife set.
Oh, yeah, that was a
good
one. Those
are the colored ones.
That's his choice of weapon.
That makes me never want to use those again. They're like the rainbow knife set.
All right. God. Rainbow knife set. Gustafsson's boyfriend, Jacob Krimi Appleby, a 23-year-old from Epsom, froze Gustafsson's leg in February 2019, forcing it to be amputated and was sentenced to 3 years and 8 months for GBH. Also involved were Damien Burns, who had carried out Gustafsson's castration years earlier and was sentenced to 5 years. Nurse Nathan Arnold, 48, from Kensington, West London, received a 2-year suspended sentence for the removal of Gustafsson's nipple with a scalpel in the summer of 2019.
I mean, 2019 was just a crazy year for him.
Insane. And Gustafsson pleaded guilty to 30 counts of conspiracy to commit grievous bodily harm between 2016 and 2022. He also admitted to 5 more counts of causing GBH with intent, making an indecent image of a child, possessing criminal property, possessing extreme pornographic images, and 3 counts of distributing indecent pseudo photographs of a child. Gustafsson received a sentence of 22 years. What are pseudo photo? A pseudo photo of a child would be anything that has been produced and depicts a child who is posed or pictured indecently, for example, in a sexual way. This can also include pseudo photographs which depict an adult involved in an indecent way with a child or are involved in an indecent act with a child.
Oh, look, here we go. They're digitally manipulated or computer-generated representatives that appear to be real photographs, but are in fact entirely fictional or artificially created.
Oh, my God.
Why would you?
Because you get a kick off of that.
Yeah. Uh-uh.
It's like anime, sexual anime things. Oh. Like you, okay. Yeah. That's just, that's a whole nother shade of crazy. Unwill.
Yeah. Mm-mm. He is like at the top of the unwell meter.
I think so. This case also sent ripples through the broader body modification community, with many people condemning Gustafsson's actions as a betrayal of their ethics. Body modification has always pushed for boundaries, but practitioners and advocates argue that it must be done ethically, safely, and with proper medical oversights.
Agreed.
So people are allowed to split their tongues. They're allowed to pierce their body.
Yeah. But they want to do it. They're not coerced into doing it. And
there's a lot of people with body dysmorphia that feel like their body parts don't belong to them.
Mm.
And so they, you know, those are the ones that he's probably preyed on in the past, or, you know, when he was in business.
Now, of course, he's. Yeah. I wonder if he had like a tax ID number and all that.
I don't think so.
He didn't pay his taxes either.
I don't think any of it was taxable. No.
Huh.
But, you know, there are limits of what you can and cannot do.
Yeah. I think the limit would be using your kitchen knife to remove a body part from somebody.
Yes. So, anywho, that's the whole story of the eunuch maker. And he's still at a jailhouse. So.
Yeah, so I'm really upset that I picked this one. Now I have nightmares.
I was like, which damn one it. Do you want to hear? She's like, the eunuch maker sounds good.
Oh, no.
No. Not so much.
Oh, no, it's not.
Although, you know, the Italian thing was really crazy.
So crazy.
Yeah.
Damn. I didn't know you Italians were so spicy.
Spicy.
All right. Okay. Well, this was it. Now you can go throw up or, you know, whatever you need to do.
Yeah. I feel like I'm like, have my legs crossed really, really tight.
You ain't got no balls. You don't have to worry about it.
I don't have it. It's just like sympathy pain.
I know. I know. Can you imagine?
Oh my God.
What a horrible thing.
Mm-mm.
That's so terrible. Anyway, we appreciate you listening to our podcast. And you know us as the bitches who are unwell. And now you really know why. And we hope you join us next week for a not so gruesome podcast. Just kidding. It will be gruesome.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Sorry. Gotta happen. Okay. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
We appreciate you listening to our podcast. If you liked it, please give us a good rating. You can listen on your favorite podcast platform with new releases every Friday. Just search for Bitch, I'm Not Well. Send us suggestions for an episode at b.tchimnotwell@gmail.com because Gmail won't let us use bitch. Or visit our website at www.bitchimnotwell.com. for more podcasts and our fabulous merchandise.
We'll see you next week on another podcast about another crazy bitch who is truly unwell.